And it's a big morning for this radio show. Fernando, our producer for some 25 years, has had a holy grail for a guest, and he has been chasing this guest for pretty much that entire time. And he finally landed this guest. Matthew McConaughey has given us a lot of entertainment over the years. The Oscar-winning actor, the UT sports ambassador, Texas own, the UT mascot. He has been a lava lamp for us because he's just given us so much great audio and moments over the years that we've talked about. And in the beginning, he annoyed me, but I've grown to really love him. I just think he's, I think he's great. I think he's wildly entertaining.
Yeah.
He embraces who he is. He can be really crazy out there, weird, but I really do think he's kind of himself. I've never thought it was an act. And so when Fernando told us that we got Matthew McConaughey on the program, I was really excited about it. So we set up an interview with him last Friday, and the three of us were going to conduct this interview, a Zoom interview. And at the last second, I got called away. My 88-year-old dad needed some help, and so family comes first, so I went to help him. And I missed this interview, and I hated that I couldn't be a part of this, because this has happened before in ticket history. I remember I was out one morning, not at work, and that was the morning that Will Ferrell happened to come by the station and wandered into the studio, and you guys got to interview Will Ferrell.
Yeah, we didn't know about that one until day of.
Yeah, so it's happened a few times on the show that I've missed these huge name guests, and it drives me crazy, but in the end, I'm really, really happy for the show that we got him.
Yeah, it was cool. I'm sorry you weren't a part of it. You would like him even more if you had the personal interaction with him.
I bet.
We had a really good visit with him.
Yeah, we were scheduled to talk with him for, I think, 10 minutes, and it ended up going over 20.
Yeah, so. I kept waiting for all of a sudden the screen to go blank at some point, but he hung in there with us and really good conversation with us.
You could talk all day with Matthew McConaughey.
What did he look like as you're looking at him on the Zoom screen? What was he wearing?
He was wearing, it seemed like a kind of a dark T-shirt, and his hair was slicked back.
Hair kind of slicked back. About the usual length for him.
And wasn't he wearing some Michael Irvin sympathy glasses? Michael Irvin sympathy glasses?
Yeah. Yeah, I think he did have some glasses on. And he's doing this tour now, this virtual tour, to promote his book, Green Lights, which basically
great title.
His memoirs of what has happened to him in his life. And he's had a very interesting life and has a very interesting perspective. And yeah, it is right in the sweet spot of Matthew McConaughey with some of the things he had to say to us.
You get some real peak McConaughey moments in this, and
yes.
We'll listen to the first part now. You'll hear us as we joined Matthew.
Right, all right, all right.
I know the author of those three words.
How you doing, Matthew?
Thank you, Matthew.
Relatively pretty good. How we doing, gang?
All right.
Doing great. I'm Gordon.
Gordon?
I'm George. Matthew, nice to...
George.
You ready to go, Matthew?
Yeah, I'm ready, man.
All right, the Muser's here, and we're with a guy that we've talked about on the air so many times it's ridiculous, who's provided us with hours and hours of entertainment, and now he joins us on the program. It's Matthew McConaughey. Matthew, how are you?
Good morning, man. How we doing? I'm doing
all right.
Good.
Doing well. You talking to us from Austin?
Talking to you from Austin, Texas.
Do you live full-time in Austin, or do you have a few other places around the globe you...
Ooh, we're full-time in Austin. It's the only address that I own. We used to have another one in California, but we recently sold that. The whole family enjoys it, I think, a little more in Texas. And luckily, I'm in a position where I can go out there, out west, and like concentrate 2 weeks of just taking a bunch of meetings, hit it and get it, and come on back.
So tell us about the book. How hard was this to put together as far as what to put in and what to leave out, as they say?
Yeah. Yeah. So I've been keeping in diaries / journals for 36 years, since I was 14. And they've always been something that when I was done with the journal, I'd put it in a couple Ziplocs and wrap it up and rubber band and put it in this treasure chest. And that treasure chest has always traveled with me. And it's always been one of those things, though, or if the house burns down, grab the pets and make sure you get that treasure chest, please. Well, I've been threatening about 15 years ago. I was threatening myself to go away and see what the hell was in that treasure chest and see if it was something worthy of sharing. But I didn't have the courage to go open it. And I kept looking at it, but I kept going, you know what, I'll die and Camilla will open it up and maybe something will be worth sharing. And in martyrdom, maybe someone will share it. Well, I kind of finally called BS on myself a couple of years ago with the help of my wife telling me to get the hell out of here and go find out what was in them. And I took them away to the desert and sat down with them, me and myself, and for 12 days. And what I found was seven categories. There were a bunch of stories, people, places, prescribes, poems, prayers, and a whole bunch of bumper stickers. So that was my seven sort of pillars. And then as I went through those, I found this theme of green lights, meaning things in my life where I'd caught green lights and I noticed why from habits I had. I'd created green lights in my future, and meaning green lights to say go. Yes, we affirm your way, the things we all love, right? So I found that I'd created green lights through some of my choices. I found that I've just gotten damn lucky quite a few times, and green lights have been thrown in my lap, and there were times I did things with them and turned them into brighter lights. And then I found that the yellow and red lights that I'd had, the crises, the hardships in my life, the crises we all have in our life, that there were green light lessons in those red and yellow lights, that sometimes I noticed it while I was in it. Sometimes I didn't notice it till the next day or the next week or the next month or the next year, and some of them I still haven't noticed what that green light lesson is. But I do believe that every red and yellow light in our life will eventually turn green or reveal itself to have a green light lesson in it. And that's really where the title came from, and what the book's about. So hopefully it's something worth sharing. I mean, on day four, I'll say this. I did write this down. Look, I'm a celebrity. I said, look, some people are going to buy your book because Matthew McConaughey wrote it, because you wrote it, Matthew. Some people are not going to buy the book, particularly because you wrote it, Matthew McConaughey. I said, look, can the words in this book be worthy of being signed by Anonymous, but at the same time be a book that only I could have written? So that was my sort of measure of excellence, North Star, that I was going for.
So that being your pole star that you're going for in the book, in your life, you seem to have a pretty strong pole star as far as... You seem awfully spiritual in a way. I don't know if you're religious or just consider yourself excessively spiritual. You are religious.
I'm religious. You know, that word spiritual, and I share this on the thing, you know, the word religion has been sort of bastardized by mankind when it got corporatized and got exclusive of so many things. But you may find this interesting. I do. I love the prescriptive roots of words. Religion comes from the Latin root religare. Ligare means to bind together. Re means again. Well, that's what everybody I know that's saying they're spiritual is talking about. Unity and people, everyone coming together. So actually, I think a lot of people that say they're spiritual are actually religious. But I understand why people say I'm not religious, because religion has been corporatized and has been excluded a lot of people along the way. But the root of it, I believe, is what something that we're all sort of going for.
When we saw the title, we were hoping it was just going to be more stories about guys who had a green light on top of like an RV or something, just like a series of green lights. So I was totally thrown off by the title.
Well, but you get it, right? I mean, there's a few trailer park stories. Look, a whole nother book. There could be a whole nother book about my trailer park stories. And there's a lot of characters that were interested in nothing but the green light that was on top of my trailer, which was a green light that was... Connect meant the satellite was hooked into the Hughes satellite up north so I could watch my late night football game. I met quite a few characters that were like, no, I just want to know what that damn LED is right there.
How many Airstreams do you got right now? And what do you got?
Four. I got four right now. So the first one was that my 28-footer you're talking about there. That's called the Canoe. There's a story why it's called the Canoe in the book. That one I lived in for 4 years on the road. And, you know, if you're in an Airstream long enough, what's beautiful about it is they're only big enough to have one of your favorite things. It gets cluttered if you got two of anything, right? So, and the other cool thing about it is they're a minimal enough square footage where you can go ahead and say, well, I'm going to get the best one thing that there is because I don't have enough square footage to blow all my money. So I tricked that one out really well. And different people have helped me, and carpenters and builders along the way helped me customize that one. And then once I knew I was like really what I loved about the Airstream living and how I lived, I got a shell of a 36 footer off the assembly line in Cleveland. Nothing but the shell and the tires, not a window, nothing. And worked with this designer, started on a napkin in a bar 14 years ago and fully designed the entire interior of this 36 footer. Every window is nautical, rounded. It's got wine casket and whiskey casket barrel floors in it. film I did U571. I got a light panel for every switch to turn everything on and off of the S33 U-boat, S33 submarine. So it's a switch where, you know, on your SUV, you have to go locally to every switch. Well, what I did is I pulled all the switches to one panel, and I said, if it's red light, it's off. If it's a green light, it's on. So everything's a switch. I've got a world map in there that's backlit. I flipped my queen bed around instead of going the long way. I flipped it around to fit to go east to west in the back of the Airstream, which gave me another 18 inches, and I raised it. Because, you know, Airstreams don't have much storage space under the bed. I raised mine another 8 inches, so my storage space is quite a bit better, where I could fit fishing rods and surfboards in through the back, and they could stick through under the bed into the cabin of the Airstream. So that's called the Smithsonian, because for reasons as I just riffed off the damn thing and what it cost me, should be able to do everything but fly.
People think about Texas when they hear or see you. What do you think about the recent controversy in the eyes of Texas? And it just seems like it is such a firestorm in Austin right now.
It is. And look, these are we're dealing with so much of the country's dealing with this. You know, what is the root of this song, this monument? What are we? How far and what should we erase in our history? You know, and how far, and then there's a question I hear some people ask, well, how far back should we go? We have to I think, you know, measure, and I don't have the answer, but I think we're in a time where we're measuring that, and we have to measure, well, how much are we being reactionary right now, because it's a topic that there's a real platform and a real microphone for, but how much do we need to go, hey, what's the reality here and what's the real justified fair thing to do and go forward? My first gut is this, my gut instinct on the eyes of Texas at present, and it has been since this issue came up. And this is a play on the word eyes of Texas, but I thought about it. I'm like, look, in the form of rehabilitation, which is what we're all trying to figure out here, right? If my eyes don't see, if I'm having trouble seeing, you don't gouge my eyes, you get me glasses. So to begin to play on the word of the eyes of Texas, I'm saying, well, let's not get rid of the eyes. Let's just change the way the eyes see. I University of Texas hijacked that song from what its roots were. It has no present meaning or intention of what it did in its origin. All right. So while I understand and respect why it's disgraceful because of its origin, I'm like, well, we've rehabilitated that song. We hijacked it. We stole it. It's like the U2 song that talks about, hey, you know, yeah, hey, Charles Manson stole that Beatles tune, Helter Skelter. Hey, we're stealing it back. We got it. No, that's not what we're standing for. This is what we mean by it. And it does mean a halo of excellence above us to go, hey, let's have something that we have an expectation for who we are as Longhorns here. So that's how I see it. I say don't change the eyes, just change the way the eyes see. Change what the song, we know, let's embrace what the change of what the song means and what we've turned it into. At the same time, I understand how that doesn't sit well and why some people want to get rid of it. It's an ongoing conversation, and I'm very interested to see where we land on this.
I'd like to transfer from that subject into the subject of Merkins, if we could. And that's where we'll pick up part two of our Matthew McConaughey interview tomorrow.
Wasn't he great?
When he discusses Merkins.
That was fantastic.
He's so McConaughey, isn't he?
Yes. Yeah. He's great to listen to. He's really articulate. He's really smart. He's thoughtful. Gives you good answers, not just the normal stuff. And I love a couple of those moments. One, yeah, I wrote this book, and I knew a lot of people would buy it because it was written by Matthew McConaughey, and a lot of people wouldn't because it was written by Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, that's kind of the world we live in now. Yeah, and it seems like he would have a really descriptive explanation for everything. Where'd you get that glass? Oh, that's not just glass.
Yeah.
It's green glass that I got from a guy that worked at a pawn shop.
It's more of an idea.
And I call it the canoe.
There's actually a great store behind it. Hey, where'd you get that highlighter? There's actually a great store behind where I got this highlighter. Everything's got a story.
Yeah, everything's got a story.
Everything works on multiple levels.
Yeah, and he goes right into it. Man, I could have talked to him for 3 hours.
I know.
It probably did seem like 3 hours to him that we spent 20 minutes with him, but he was great.
And we know people who grew up with him or went to UT with him, and they say he was like that. He was exactly like that before he got famous, too.
Yeah.
Talk just like that.
Yes.
Live just like that.
That's why I've always had the feel that this is him. This is not an act.
No.
And he'd probably be a great guy to sit down and have a beer with or five beers with. It'd be really entertaining.
Well, it really does make me want to go through the book, too, because there are some stories we do get into tomorrow, but P1s have alerted me of some others, like doing peyote in a cage with a mountain lion.
How McConaughey is that? Yeah, the stuff you'll hear tomorrow, Junior, you'll hear about some really disturbing scenes in his family he witnessed, which is crazy. You'll hear the story of how his father died, which is very insane.
Yes.
I mean, for most of us, it'd be...
And he has no problem sharing these stories,
right.
That was my question about, was it tough to... But not for him.
No.
He'll tell you anything.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, he lets it all hang out.
And
so,
we'll get here
tomorrow.
We'll get to hear about Merkins tomorrow.
That's right.
Merkins story.
All right, part two of our exclusive Musers interview with Matthew McConaughey tomorrow at 8:15. Make sure you're with us. Now it is time at 8:15 on the ticket for part two of our exclusive Musers interview with Matthew McConaughey. I told you guys yesterday I had to miss this interview, and it was really terrible. I really wanted to be a part of it, but we heard part one yesterday. You guys did a great job with him.
Thank you for knowing that and recognizing what a great job we did. Yeah, this is a long line of people that you've missed out on. You missed out on Matthew McConaughey.
Mm-hmm.
You missed out on Will Ferrell.
Yep.
You missed out on Willie Nelson.
We wrote a song with Willie on his bus one night.
Wrote a song with Willie. And there was one other one. I can't remember who it was. This one brought to our attention.
Adrian Peterson. Jackson hijacked the interview.
To him.
Ordered that hit, too. He's the one who brought Jesse Jackson over.
The Willie Nelson thing was the sorriest, because that day I asked you guys, hey, let's all go to the Willie Nelson show at House of Blues. And you were like, eh. And then the next morning I find out that we all got invited, and you guys just didn't bother to call me to go with you, and you got to go on his tour bus.
Gordon was supposed to pick you up.
George said that he was going to contact you, so that was the problem there.
Unbelievable.
So yesterday we heard part one of our Matthew McConaughey interview. Giorgio and I sat down with Matthew for an intimate conversation last week, and forgot to text Junior the information on how to join the chat. But we talked with Matthew yesterday, and we ended, you may remember, by asking him about Merkin. Because it's one of the crazy stories of Matthew McConaughey is why he and his buddies call each other Merkin. And he tells us the answer to that story. We also get into some of the stories that are in his new book, Green Lights, including some disturbing tales of violence that he witnessed as a child.
Crazy.
His parents' fights were legendary. And the way his father passed away is just amazing that he would even share it. But he does, because he's Matthew McConaughey. So enjoy part two of something we call Peak McConaughey. I understand, I believe you have a friend that had a nickname, Merkin.
Oh, my great friend, John Chaney. Merkin. Let me tell you this origin story. So there's this great comedy show. It used to be on Comedy Central called Exit 57. Stephen Colbert used to be on it. A few other comedians that you would recognize. And we would watch it on Sunday nights at 9:30. And one of the skits was this guy who was played by Stephen Colbert, actually, is behind his desk in Chicago. He's the chief editor of the Chicago Sun-Times newspaper, right? And in barges this guy, played by Mitch Rouse. So he's holding a newspaper, and he slams it on his desk, and he goes, "I quit. I'm out of here." And the Colbert character's like, "What's your problem this time, Merkin?" And he goes, "I'll tell you what my problem is." He goes, "I'm a small-town boy from Tennessee. I love the weather. I've always wanted to report the weather. And I write partly cloudy with a slight chance of rain. And you, Mr. Editor, you take my words and you print possible showers. I quit. Right? So it's a crazy skit. But he kept going, the editor played by Stephen Colbert kept going like, you wear the line, Merkin. And so my buddy and I start calling each other Merkin. Not knowing. It's a name from that skit, right? It's great. We think it's funny. So we call each other Merkin. Well, one day on the set of Time to Kill, I'm in there getting my hair and makeup done by this man, Ben Nye. And John Cheney, who was my assistant at the time, comes by the show and goes, hey, Merkin, what you want for breakfast? I said, give me three eggs and some toast and bacon. He goes, all right, Merkin. Well, Ben Nye, the guy doing my hair and makeup, starts giggling and quits doing my hair. And I'm like, what? And he's like, what did you just call each other? I go, oh, Merkin. He goes, do you know what that is? And I said, yeah. And I told him the story I just told you. He goes, no, but do you know what that is? I was like, no. He goes, man, a Merkin is a pubic wig.
What?
Okay.
What? Which then made me and my buddy Cheney go, we have the perfect nickname for each other. Yes.
It's just a funny word, isn't it?
Merkin. It is a funny word.
What are you working on next film-wise, Matthew?
I don't have any plans right now, film-wise. I've had too much fun writing this book, and now I'm having too much fun being on tour with this book. And I'd like to, eventually, if we weren't doing this virtually, my plan was to go give some live shows and do live stand-up storytelling from the book. And that's something I'm still interested in when it's time to go re-engage and go person-to-person again. I'm going to finish out this book tour through the rest of the year. And I think what happens in the rest of this year with this book is going to really define what my next creative endeavor is going to be, whether that is turning some of these stories into a film or a television series, or whether it becomes a stand-up act on the road, or whether I just settle back down and start writing the next book, hopefully.
A lot of candor in that book. I mean, you have some pretty crazy and intense stories there. A lot of intense family stories. The story you open the book, first chapter, is a particular fight that your parents had in the kitchen that had one of them, I think, holding a broken ketchup bottle. Your mom holding a broken ketchup bottle to your dad. And
my dad was holding the ketchup bottle, but he only picked up the ketchup bottle because mom had the 12-inch chef's knife and was trying to cut him from Gulliver to nuts, was her quote unquote.
And this is when you were how old? 6 years old, something like that?
I think I was four.
Four. And then what's interesting is how that fight ended up. You want to tell us that?
Absolutely beautiful. Yeah. So this was a what could have been, a violent fight. No, blood was drawn because mom took the phone across my dad's bridge of his nose and broke it. But while she had the knife brandished, dad, while they were circling each other and he was dodging her sort of swipes of the knife, he grabs this very, very, very coolly, kind of grabs this ketchup bottle, open Heinz bottle that was on the counter, screws off the top. And while she's got the knife, he takes this matador pose and starts going and slathering ketchup across her, right? And so she's wiping it from her eyes, screaming, and then he starts going, touche. And she's getting slathered with ketchup. It's stinging my eyes. Stop it, Jim. Stop it. Finally, she gets frustrated, drops the knife. He drops the ketchup bottle. They look at each other. There's blood on the floor. Ketchup's on the floor. And then they came together, dropped to the floor, and made love. And that's about the time that I exited the room.
Wow. Sounds like your life, doesn't it, George?
Yeah, it's weird. The same thing happened to me in second grade. So,
last night. Yeah, you see it happening all the time, right?
But that is the personal thing, though, what you put in. I mean, you're really sharing something that's, very intimate to your family. Was that a tough thing about? I guess I will share that.
Well, look, we had a lot of love in our family. Love was never in question. My mom and dad were divorced twice, married three times. Just by sheer numbers, that means the love won out again. They had fights like that. What did they end up doing at the end of the fight? Making love. The love won out again. There was never a question in about the love in our family. And when people ask about the love in my family, I always have told these sort of violent discipline stories that had wild consequences. And I've been thinking about why. Because there were much more times where we were all lovey-dovey, a family sitting around the table laughing and getting along. I mean, 95% more times. But I tell these stories because sort of the violence, it looks like this could end tragically. But no matter how violent it was or how ugly or awkward the situation was, it never had a chance of puncturing the cocoon of love that we had. It never had a chance. There was never a question. We were raised on this, hey, I love you, I just don't like you right now. Well, I tell these stories of moments of great dislike that was happening, but never the great dislike never had a chance of beating out the fact that we loved each other. And so I think that's why I tell them, because the love was tested, but never had a chance of getting beat.
And your father's life had a poetic ending to this relationship.
Yep.
And you want to tell us that?
Sure. So Dad had a good weekend of golf. I'm 62. Let me precede this with what he was. He was a pretty heavy smoker. And he had gone and done this experimental thing where you get some dye run through your body to see how your aorta and how your blood's flowing. And he would come back from this and we'd say, and he'd pick up a cigarette. We go, Bob, you sure you're supposed to smoke a cigarette? You've been getting checked out for your heart. And he's like, oh, no, buddy. Doc says I got the heart of a 22-year-old high hurdler. And he starts smoking again. We're like, oh, geez, okay. I think Bob's great. Well, cut to one Monday morning, he wakes up 6 o'clock, a little frisky, and mom wakes up. They make love, and he dies of a heart attack, heart fibrillation. My brothers and I, go up in arms. We're going after that damn doctor who said he had the heart of a 22-year-old high hurdler, because we're going to get that SOB, right? We barge in on that doctor, and he's like, what? What? No. I've been telling that, Jim, you're all blocked up. You're in bad shape. Quit smoking. Quit doing all that stuff. I didn't tell him his heart was in great shape. So Pop was lying to us. His heart was in horrible shape, but he wouldn't. He just kept having a cigarette. But he went out and he called his shot. He always told me and my two brothers, boys, when I go, I'm going to be making love to your mother. Oh. Damn if he didn't do it.
Just transition from one heaven to the next.
Yeah. Beautiful. I mean... Uh-huh. You know, and people have said, oh my gosh, is that a kiss and tell story you shouldn't share? I'm like, well, obviously you don't know my mother. My mom, that's one of her proudest and most honorable stories she shares.
Do you make it up to Dallas very often? You hang out with any of your buddies up here?
I've got a few up there I hang out with. You know, I was raised over there in Longview, over there in the big thicket to the east of y'all. And now reside in Austin. I like it when I get to Dallas. You know, the Jones family, I've gotten to know a little bit. And, boy, I've toured that area and the organization they've got. And they've been now that I've gotten into being a, you know, professional sports owner with Austin FC and working with UT on an arena there, they really opened up their doors and gave me a lot of great tips about how to run a team and how to run a business of a team.
Do you ever understand Jerry's sentence structure? He kind of wanders when he speaks. His sentences are winding like the Amazon River.
And I do understand that because my sentences like to wander like the Amazon River as well sometimes.
Well, hook 'em horns, Matthew.
All right. Well, thank you. We'll see. We will see. We get back on track this weekend. And good talking to y'all, man.
All right. Thank you, Matthew.
All right. Appreciate
Matthew McConaughey, new book, Green Lights.
As we looked into the Zoom screen of Matthew McConaughey looking back at us, he did the thing that I've always wanted. He's the only one that does it like this.
Hook 'em horns.
When he does the hook 'em horns,
facing
he goes,
the wrong way.
Yes, he faces it the wrong way.
Huh. I don't think I've ever noticed that.
Oh, yeah, he always does that.
Just I wonder
puts
why.
It up like a gang sign or something. I don't know.
Can you believe? Would you want to know if your dad passed away that way?
I wouldn't want to know any of that, and I wouldn't want to see that in the kitchen.
And I've seen him tell the story of how his father passed away before, and he's claimed that it was at the moment of climax.
God. I do like the line, he called his shot.
Called his shot.
He always said he'd call his shot.
What?
You want your dad to say that to you over the years, and by the way, kids.
His dad had told him and his brothers that multiple times.
Yeah.
When I leave this earth.
I'm going to be doing that to your mother.
What a crazy relationship.
Divorced the mattress
twice from each other, married three times to each other.
Yeah.
That's how crazy.
Love won. So you love one out, 3-2.
Well, it could be other interpretations of that story, but no, I understand why he would go
Matthews,
with the
love wins
with the most positive one.
Maybe I'll make his book my November book to read. I'm looking
there
for one.
Yeah.
Okay, Matthew McConaughey interview quiz question. Do you remember how many different categories he found the information in his journals could be sorted into?
7, right?
30?
7. Hmm. George is correct. Well, Junior, you weren't listening.
I didn't do the interview. You guys did
it. You heard it.
And then one of those could be broken down into 5 different categories, wasn't there something?
I don't remember. I just remember one of the categories was... Wasn't one of them proscribes?
Yeah, bumper stickers.
And bumper stickers.
Boy, that's interesting, though, and you've done a good job of this through the years, Gordo.
What?
Not that, but keeping a journal of your life.
Yes. I'm a little sporadic on it, but...
But, hey, even if you have a week's worth of time from 10 years ago or a month, I think that's really interesting to go back and what were you thinking at the time? Putting down details of stories because you forget about them.
Right.
I think that's a really...
It is.
That's a good practice.
I know that when, after my parents passed away and I was going through their things, it was the things that I valued the most were things like that. When I would find a journal that they had half kept for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not even that. I mean, it was like, I think I found my dad had kept a journal for, I don't know, 3 weeks or something. But that peak and that time travel going back 4 decades before and just reading about his everyday life, even the mundane details of it, was so fascinating to me.
Yep.
To be back there in those moments with him.
It's well, you guys, he did a great job with the interview.
Well, yeah, thanks. Where were you, great. Man? We kept waiting for you, and you just ditched us.
He was great, but you know, that's the thing about him. You could just say hi, and then he'd go for 10
minutes. We really didn't need to be there.
We didn't really do that much, you know.
A couple P1s have pointed out that another big guest that I always miss, Infrastructure Man.
Yep, you miss him every single time.
Yeah. Never been in studio when he's wandered in.
You always take a partial personal day. Well, that's hard to say.
Partial?
Partial day.
Yeah, just combine it.
And congratulations to Fernando for landing his Holy
Grail.
Yeah,
way to go, Fernando.
Matthew McConaughey.